on Radio Catskill.
This week in This American Life, 29 days after a local hospital closed its birthing unit, Katie went into labor. So that's not great, right? And then something else happened.
I said, Sasha, then get a chainsaw and cut the wall down, because I didn't want the baby to die.
One doctor doing incredible things, so many of them, things she has never done before. That's this week.
This American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill. Wherever you go, take Radio Catskill with you. Stream your favorite shows, music, and podcasts anytime, anywhere with our new and improved app. Stay connected with local news and national headlines all in one place. You can even send us your thoughts with the Talk to Us feature, audio or video, right from your phone. No radio? No problem. Just press play. It's Radio Catskill right in your pocket. Download the app today on iPhone or Android.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Joe Piasek, the man with a plan to bring a radio station to Roxbury, New York, where he and his wife lived in the Catskills. Joe has had a life in radio, moving around a bit and finally settling in Roxbury in the late 90s. Now his station, WIOX, is merging with Radio Catskill, and it was actually Joe who approached General Manager Tim Bruno with this idea. In the first half of the show, Joe's going to tell us about his life in radio. Let's get to it. Welcome to Catskill Character, Joe. I've really been looking forward to speaking with you.
My pleasure, Donna. Catskill characters, there's no shortage of characters in the Catskills for sure. So
that is for sure.
Big bench to choose from.
Well, let's start with your early years growing up in Connecticut. What would you like to tell us about that?
Where do I start? I listened to the radio. I had transistor radios all the time. They really burned through batteries then. My mother was flitting around the kitchen with Elvis playing on a AM top 40 station, or my favorite radio DJ that inspired me to get into it originally, Joey Reynolds, on WPOP in Hartford. I joined his club, the Royal Order of the Night People, and I had to buy RIT purple dye and dye my radio case purple to join Joey Reynolds' Royal Order of the Night People. I always liked that imagination, theater of the mind radio. And so I grew up with that and was drawn into it.
This is a kind of an awkward time to bring this in, because that was such a cheerful expression of your childhood. But you did tell me that your father was a Holocaust survivor. And I was wondering if he ever said anything about music playing a part in his survival.
My father was a baker, and he had a bakery. He was lucky to survive the Holocaust. And as I understand him, he was a metaphorical dancer. He was able to move through one obstacle after another after another from 11 to 17 years old and was able to survive. He wouldn't say that he was a dancer, but the story that I've eventually learned about all of the opportunities and dangers that befell him, he clearly had some rhythm going on there.
Mm. Oh, I love that expression, a metaphorical dancer. I'm glad that he was able to move through that the way he did.
He did. He was an incredible baker. And in the bakery, we always had the radio on.
Of course.
Right? He let me put whatever station I wanted. And by the way, that's where I won a ticket to see the Beatles at Shea Stadium, by calling in to the Big D. And unfortunately, as a 14-year-old, and you getting one ticket and being a distance from Shea Stadium, I didn't attend the concert.
You did make music a central part of your life, or we wouldn't be sitting here. Didn't you start in radio at Quinnipiac College?
Yeah, Quinnipiac is a really interesting university now. It's a beautiful, beautiful location just outside New Haven.
And you worked at the radio station there. That was your first radio experience.
Yeah, it was. And luckily, the engineer there had a commercial radio station on Cape Cod and offered me an opportunity to have my first commercial job out in Falmouth, Massachusetts, which also opened my eyes up to a whole diverse culture of who's out there, because with 50,000 watts on the ocean in Cape Cod, the listeners, when everything from the Coast Guard to the oceanographers in Woods Hole and the Mashpee Indians, which were the local kids who were, you know, I would say mild hoodlums that called and invited me out to scare the hell out of me. 36 hours a week on the air. So I was able to cut my teeth on how to use a microphone. But, you know, one of the things I did discover there was my voice, you know, not literally my voice. Yes, the tonality of how to use it and how to interface with a microphone, but also just personality, how you develop who you are in relation to what you're conveying to your audience. A lot different than, you know, what DJs evolved to be over time, which was, you know, acting as somebody who knew what they were talking about, actually emoting their own personality.
So after you did that, where did you go from there?
I went back to New Haven and got a job at WPLR in the progressive rock era. Because my name is so like hard to pronounce sometimes,
yes.
Or maybe not memorable, because radio people had, you know, Long John Neville or... you know, Dickie Robinson, or, you know, so I had to change my name at the urging of the program director. And I spent a lot of time listening to the Fire Sign Theater and thought if I was going to adopt a name, I need to be inspired. So I adopted a Fire Sign Theater named Joe from Chicago. It's amazing how many people knew me from Chicago, a place I've never been.
I want to get to your move to WRNW, which also had a progressive rock format, but it was important for you because that was where you met your first wife, the DJ Meg Griffin.
Yeah, I got to WRNW in a circuitous manner. It wasn't kind of like a career move, although it became one. I was on the air WPLR, and a DJ at WHCN, Lisa Garland, called me up and said, how would you like to work in New York? And we were kind of competitors or at competitor stations in Connecticut at the time. And I said, of course, you know. And so she introduced me to Tom O'Hare and Vince Cremona at WQIV, which was the quad sound of rock in New York, short-lived, 1975. That station fell apart because the FCC started to get involved, or they continued to get involved in programming. And WQIV used to be WNCN, supported by the Classical Music Listeners Guild, and they complained that rock was not classical. And the whole group at WQIV, most of which went out to Westchester County, which is WRNW, and I got kind of pulled in with that group. Although some of them went to Boston, and I spent a little bit of time at WCOZ in Boston, I became the program director at WRNW, and yes, that's where I met Meg, and a very timid new DJ, Howard Stern.
Yes, your experience of Howard Stern is quite different from the one that people normally think of when they think of Howard Stern, as, you know, Howard Stern. Howard said that Meg was the best female rock DJ he'd ever come across. And she's also known to be the first DJ to play punk rock music. And I was wondering if you were into punk rock back then.
Well, there were two female DJs at WRNW at the time. Both great, both very well rooted in punk rock. Jane Hamburger and Meg Griffin. And I was only into it because they both introduced me to the genre, but it was, to me, it was like more closely aligned to 50s and 60s rock turned up a great volume. We went to CBGB all the time, and yeah, I was introduced to those bands and found them exciting and thrilling, mainly because the people that were drawn to them were excited and thrilled.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's something that you and Meg did while you were there. It was called From Elvis to Elvis. And I want you to tell the listener why that was important for New York radio.
After WRNW kind of fell apart, I was lucky to get a job through a friend of mine, Ray Dariano, the comic, to WPIX. And eventually became the program director of WPIX. And that was in the city. where the competition was WPLJ and WNEW. And so Meg agreed to join me there. And because I was inspired by rock and roll throughout its history, I thought, what's missing here is the breadth and depth of rock and roll on the radio, not just a particular era or a particular format or a particular type of music. You had PLJ that was just the, you know, most popular rock music. You had NEW, which was the most progressive music. You had CBS FM, which was oldies, rock and roll oldies. But you didn't have any station that threaded them all together to create this, what we called the Elvis to Elvis format. And it was Elvis Presley to Elvis Costello and everything that was threaded between there, creating a timelessness of rock music rather than an era-based version of it.
And a lot of people were listening to that. Apparently, people from MTV were listening to that. You and Meg were both asked to audition, and she was offered a job that she didn't accept. But you eventually worked at Nickelodeon. I'd love for you to just give the listener a sense of what you did there.
Yeah, well, Nickelodeon was part of the MTV networks. And I was brought in at the beginning. I had, again, an old friend of mine, Leslie Schaefer from WPLR, introduced me to Jerry Laybourne, who was the general manager at the time of Nickelodeon. And they were starting up this commercial kids cable network. Prior to Jerry's appointment there, it was a non-commercial, kind of like a long version of Sesame Street. And so the idea was to get educators involved and parents involved in creating a commercial version that wouldn't exploit children, but would engage them and have their parents want to buy cable television because there was a kids' television network. I was fortunate enough to have a kid at the time. My son Noah was 4 or 5 years old when I got hired at Nickelodeon, and was very inspired by the folks that came in at the beginning there. In particular, Jerry Laybourne, Debbie Beese, and Fred Seibert, and Scott Webb.
But what did you do there?
Well, I was part of the team that helped structure the channel based on kind of radio formatics. And then I was the voiceover, the kind of predominant voice of the voiceover credits. You know, the show ends, the credits run, and the announcer comes on and says, you know, the Rugrats are coming up next, something like that, you know. And I probably did tens of thousands of those for about a 20-year period of time. And then I worked with other voiceover talent, structuring the network, not within the shows, but with the interstitial programming between the shows.
I see.
And so I set up a production studio with a team that just put out, you know, 20-second, 30-second audio spots every week, you know, scores of them. I sent them to the network uplink. And we operated Nickelodeon that way as if it was a radio station, with the programs, the long form programs, being equivalent to the music, and the interstitials being equivalent to the things that tied the music together or tied the programs together.
Okay, well, I think this is a good time to take a break. And when we return, I want to talk about WIOX. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. And my guest today is Joe Piesek. I know I didn't say that right.
Pretty close.
Close, okay. Radio pioneer, among many other things. We'll be right back.
On this Old House Radio Hour, why killing your lawn might be the smartest thing you can do.
I've never done it for someone and had them go back to a lawn, had them be like, you know what, this sucks, I hate it. Every time they're like, quite the opposite.
Contractor damaged your home? Find out what to do before you get stuck with the bill. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it may be too hot to even think about turning on your oven, but we're going to do our best to make you want to. We've got summer baking with the Pie Queen of Los Angeles and a 60-time Blue Ribbon winner at the Iowa State Fair. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg with today's guest, Joe Piasek, one of the founders of WIOX in Roxbury, New York, that's soon to merge with Radio Catskill. Before WIOX, Joe had a long career in radio that we spoke about in the first half of the show, and now we're going to concentrate on WIOX, the station he co-founded in 2010 that is merging with Radio Catskill. What does that mean exactly? Hopefully, Joe will shed some light. Here we go. So, Joe, what motivated you to move to the Catskills?
We found an old farmhouse, which was down the road from my sister-in-law. My wife, Jane's sister, had a place in Margaretville, and we used to come and visit. And my son was now going to college, and it was Syracuse. So we were living in Stamford, Connecticut, and Roxbury was halfway between Stamford and Syracuse. It took us 4 years to build the house so that it was livable, and by that time he had graduated. By 2004, we figured out how to just not have to go back and fight traffic on Sunday night, or Friday for that matter, and be able to stay. So in 2004, we relocated to Roxbury.
Why did you want to start a radio station in Roxbury?
One of the things that was missing from this part of the Catskills was radio. It's like a radio desert. Occasionally, I would move my antenna so I could find a radio station. And I'll tell you the two stations I found. One was WJFF.
You're kidding.
And the other one was Vermont Public Radio.
Oh, okay.
And there were a number of religious stations on the air. But there was really nothing that seemed to be a kind of broad appeal, popular entertainment, non-exploitational, a locally reflective radio station. Mm-hmm. So I have a good friend, Dan Kelleher, who was a radio engineer that I met in New Haven, who I've always been in touch with, and he always helped keep my equipment in good shape when I had my Nickelodeon studio. And he was a radio engineer for Clear Channel that became iHeartRadio, and Clear Channel bought up a bunch of stations, and they decommissioned most of their live radio studios. So he had built their studios, and he had all this old live radio gear sitting in his basement. And so he said to me, "Hey, Joe, if you ever want to make a radio station, I've got the equipment." And so he came up to Roxbury, and we drove around town with a makeshift antenna to see what the terrain would be like. And we figured out, well, we could probably put a radio studio in here and have it be micro wattage that didn't need a license, that could use IP, you know, innovative technologies. We're talking about, 2007. That was the time we were doing this. At the time, also, my wife and I and some friends of ours bought the old Masonic Lodge building in Roxbury, and with really no plans other than to not let it be torn down, what to do with the building. So Dr. Darn, Dan Kelleher, and I said, "Why don't we put the studio in here?" And our partners on the building said, "Well, that's not a bad idea. We got to do something with it." And so we took his equipment and built a radio studio. And as luck would have it, in 2007, the FCC opened up a window for a full-power FM license. And we convinced or petitioned, and they agreed, the town of Roxbury to be the signatory on a license application with the FCC, with the support of the local community.
What was the local community's reaction? Were they real excited seeing this happening?
Yes. The ultimate answer is yes. There was a great deal of excitement and local support. There were some naysayers who said things like, "We had never had a radio station. Why do we need one now?" And that didn't stop us, and nor did it stop the town from approving the application and the FCC approving the municipality for the license, with the proviso that Dan and I would actually operate the station, and we would do it with no tax dollars.
You didn't really go on air till 2010, right?
Correct. In 2008, the FCC approved the application, and then they give you 3 years to actually build the station. And we did it with, you know, in about 2.5 years, with the help of a lot of local folks.
How was this station funded?
Funded by underwriters and funded by the goodwill of hundreds of volunteers. So it became, you know, a real community effort.
How about telling the listener about a couple of the shows, what they're like, what they're about?
There's probably been a couple of hundred different programs on the air since the station's, you know, 15 years. The two that are still on the air that are memorable to me are From the Forest, which is a program hosted by Ryan Trapani from the Catskill Forest Association. Incredible talk show about trees, essentially, and anything connected to it. And we don't have any shortage of trees in the Catskills. And the other show that I particularly love and makes me sweat when I listen to it, even in the depths of winter, is Rumba Therapy with Mario Mario. Rumba Therapy is a mambo and Tito Puente type music, you know, salsa with news that affects the Latin American countries and community.
Fantastic. Tell me, Joe, what prompted you to reach out to Tim?
My main job was to keep us legal and to keep us operating, right? And so the legal part wasn't that difficult, and I had a great deal of help there. The other was enough money to pay the bills. And our main bill was electricity. It looked to me like we needed a partner early on, 2013. I ran into Brian Sikora, the CEO of WSKG Public Media in Binghamton. And that led to a merger there, is that WSKG eventually owned WIOX and provided NPR programming and support for our volunteers. WSKG lost that management of Brian and Caroline Basso and a few others. And we're no longer interested in this remote affiliate WIOX in the Catskills, and decided to send our volunteers packing. And I suggested to them that that might not be helpful for the WSKG brand. So they said, well, what's another opportunity? And luckily, we had started a nonprofit 501c3 educational corporation a few years earlier as a fundraising mechanism for WIOX that was actually in a good position to take the license. And that license got then transferred to WIOX. This was after WSKG had paid the bills, supported everything. And now it was like, okay, now what are we going to do?
Now what do you do?
Yeah. But we only did that because there were a few people involved then that said, no worries. We have enough money to operate if we can keep the volunteer model going. That didn't turn out to be accurate. And so we said, okay, there's got to be another way. I got some of the other folks back involved that were involved in the beginning. And it looked to me like there was only so far this could go. And I stepped back to let the new people who were involved in the station figure that out. They didn't. I mean, they reached out to me and said, there's an opportunity to get some money here. What are we going to do with the money? And a neighbor of mine, Dan Scher, who passed away a few years ago, his family had supported WIOX very generously over the years. And they said, what can you do to sustain the station? So I collaborated with some of the folks at WIOX, got pulled back in, put together a sustainability plan, and we were funded to approach a new partner and develop a merger where WIOX and its community service initiative, volunteerism, and reflectiveness of the Catskills community could be sustained. And that's where I contacted Tim Bruno at WJFF. And I'd always thought in the back of my mind that was the ideal station to create a partnership with of some form.
Now, when that happens, will our station, WJFF, Radio Catskill, be a prominent station in that area because of your transmitter?
Hopefully.
Because when you heard it, it was just very off and on.
No, I think we're talking about a true merger. The best of both stations become one Catskills radio network.
And when do you think this is going to happen?
It's a work in progress right now. We've just recently signed what's called a Program Services Operating Agreement, where WIOX, for the first time, will have paid management. And that is the WJFF management team, and we are building a bridge to create this merger over the next, you know, many months, which requires FCC approval ultimately.
Yeah.
We're working toward, you know, putting those ducks in a row.
Yeah, it's good to know that for the listeners, because, you know, they hear about this merger and they don't know that it takes time. It's not that easy. But what are you going to do now, Joe, once this goes through?
Exhale maybe a little bit, and maybe I'll play some more guitar.
Oh, cool. Okay. Because I see you as a very high energy kind of person. You always got the ideas flowing. I don't know. You and retirement don't seem like
copacetic. I definitely have energy, I would just call it being conscious, you know, but I'm also involved in SUNY Delhi. We started a applied communication bachelor's of science program a couple of years ago. It's a new major for within the School of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Delhi that is gaining some traction. And it's an approach toward communication studies that is very 21st century. You know, most of the legacy communication programs are dealing with kind of legacy media or, you know, the research that is kind of well-rooted, and I do mean well-rooted, in the second half of the 20th century. But this is very kind of forward-looking. You can't deny the forces of artificial intelligence and the way new media is approaching creating community and exploring how various cross disciplines interact with communication skills. And that's what I've been working on also for the last number of years. We started the program in 22, and last year we graduated our first class.
Oh, nice.
So I'm still involved in that.
Yeah, you're not retiring, that's for sure. You're still going to be teaching and definitely creating. So I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed having you on. It's been quite an education.
My pleasure. I've learned a lot by remaining conscious, and I appreciate your interest in pulling some of these memories out of me. Otherwise, they'd fall by the wayside.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. And also, have yourself some water.
This is the most
incredible place to live, really, is
absolutely
the capital.
Yes. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, Donna. Take care.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. My guest today has been Joe Piasek. Google him. We barely scratched the surface. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30. Please join me then for more fascinating stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Seminary Hill, open Thursday through Sunday in Calicoon, featuring Dinner with a View, live music on Fridays, and weekend brunch. Orchard and cidery tours and tastings every Sunday at 11 a.m. This summer, picnics, line dancing, and rural upskilling workshops return. Lessons in foraging, pickling, and baking sourdough. Tickets available on Resy. More information at seminaryhill.co. From generous funding from the Public Media Bridge Fund and from listeners like you.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Tyler James Williams, who plays a teacher on Abbott Elementary, said real teachers seem to like the show.
If there's a teacher within 100 yards of me, I'm gonna know.
I'm Peter Sagal. If you're within hearing distance of a radio this weekend, listen in. Wait, Wait is coming to you from Sonoma, California, with special guest Mary Roach. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
On this week's On the Media, journalist Cory Doctorow coined a term we can't say on the radio to describe how tech has gone bad. His new phrase, the reverse centaur, does the same for AI.
The most important thing about a technology isn't what it does, it's who it does it for and who it does it to.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.